Look at all of you. I thought, it might rain, they won't come. Just in case you're new, there is a back way to the church. And when we need to use it, we send email, it's on Facebook, it's on the website, so you'll know. We also have volunteers standing out there in the rain telling you to go around the back way. So don't ever not come because you think the bridge might be flooded. If it is, there's an alternative. We started talking last week about Unity's Statement of Faith. It's a historical document now. It's not really being used in Unity anymore. So just briefly, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore founded Unity in 1889 in Kansas City, Missouri. They published a magazine, they taught students, and eventually they ordained ministers. But it was 32 years before Charles Fillmore finally agreed to make a list of Unity's teachings. There'd been books and there'd been talks, but he resisted the bullet points. But his students wanted it. The International New Thought Alliance wanted to know what he was doing out there in Missouri. And he also wanted to show that he had not abandoned Christianity. So he wrote in Christian language with metaphysical meaning. And we went through all of that in some detail last week. I felt like I was forcing you to take castor oil. Fillmore's not easy to understand. Myrtle's writing is more accessible. Emily Cady in Lessons in Truth, some of the more recent authors like Eric Butterworth, they're all saying the same things. Charles didn't want to be pinned down about Unity's beliefs because he was still learning them and exploring. And to this day, there is resistance to making statements about what Unity teaches. Well, individuals are usually happy to express opinions. Ask any Unity minister what Unity teaches, and you'll get an earful. It just might not sound like any other Unity minister. When I wrote the book, The Five Principles, there was criticism from some ministers, including one on the faculty at the seminary, who said Unity shouldn't have a creed. He actually read the book 5 years later and sent me an email saying it was good after all. But I understand where they're coming from. They're thinking, if you draw a circle around unity and say, we're this and not that, then you are excluding someone or something, and we say we honor all paths to God. And I say, we honor them, we don't necessarily teach them. We flat out disagree with some of them. And as open-minded and inclusive as unity is, it doesn't mean we represent all ways of understanding God or humankind. Most of us are here because we didn't like the way it was being represented somewhere else, right? So there are different ways to look at it. We honor them all, but we have a set of beliefs that we claim. Fillmore was really conscious, careful about making a statement of belief, because he said, the creed we write today, we may not want tomorrow. And he said, and this is a key to Unity's whole structure, a statement outlining your religious beliefs is essential, but compelling clauses should be omitted. Compelling clauses compel you to do something or believe something, to recite a creed or sign an oath, and Unity doesn't do that. When we talk about Unity Worldwide Ministries, where Tim is the chair of the board, it's a central office, but they're not telling ministers what to teach in the churches. If only they could, right? Because some are pretty far out on a limb. Some think I am. But Unity Worldwide Ministries is not a top-down organization. It was organized by the churches to support the churches. So if we need financial advice, or we need a template for bylaws, or we need curriculum for the kids, we get that from Unity Worldwide Ministries. They don't tell us what to do or what to believe, and that started with Charles Fillmore. In Unity, you'll hear we have no dogma, but we do have doctrine. Dogma is a statement that you have to believe or you're out of the club. It's a compelling clause. Doctrine is just teaching, and it can unfold and it can be changed. So the Statement of Faith was changed. It was written in 1921 and published in Unity Magazine. Hang on. There it is. It looked better when it was originally published. But that's the original 1921 edition. It had 32 statements of belief. Two of them were removed in 1939, and they were about food and sex. You think I'm kidding? Here's what they said. We believe that all life is sacred and that man should not kill or be a party to the killing of animals for food. Also, that cruelty, war, and wanton destruction of human life will continue so long as men destroy animals. Then he said, we believe that the misuse of the generative function is responsible for the majority of human ills. Therefore, we believe that purity and control of sex are essential to health and the final overcoming of death. It makes more sense than you think. So let's talk about sex first. When I first read this, I thought, well, Charles Fillmore was just a fuddy-duddy. He grew up in the Victorian era. He and Myrtle were a little squeamish about having bodies at all. Although you can also see that Charles was kind of obsessed with them, bodies. He wrote a lot about sense consciousness, living only from the five senses, or carnal mind, or the animal nature. And today we might call it the reptilian brain. It's the survival, you know, give me food, let me reproduce. It's just that part of us. But look at this. He is not saying be celibate or even that sex is bad. He is saying everything was made by God. God said it was all good, and that has to include our bodies. He's just saying the misuse of sex is responsible for the majority of human ills. And I'm not sure he's wrong. How many of our conflicts and issues today have something to do with sex? Affairs and divorce, abortion, teen pregnancy, rape and incest. Who can legally marry? Where can transgenders go to the bathroom? HIV and AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. Population control. The lyrics of popular songs. What you can watch on cable TV. We talk all the time about aspects of sex, or the generative function, which Catholics call procreation. And we have different opinions about what constitutes its misuse. But look at the end. Purity and control of sex are essential to health and the final overcoming of death. We've talked in the last couple of weeks about ascension, which may be the ultimate goal for our soul's growth. We are eternal beings. We live beyond death. And probably, maybe, you no longer have to keep incarnating as a human to learn what you need to learn. Your consciousness becomes so elevated that you've outgrown this experience. So you ascend. And those who have reached that level from the earth are called ascended masters. Someone asked me just this week, I do believe that ascended masters can volunteer to come back here in human form. I think Jesus and others have done that to try once again to teach us who we are. But listen, you don't have to believe in reincarnation to be a part of unity. That would be a compelling clause. So we're not telling you what to believe. You just hear a lot of what I believe because yeah. I'm paid to do that. So much of our human experience is learning to be in these bodies. And sex is part of that. Sickness and healing are part of that. War and any form of violence that have to do with living and dying in these bodies are part of that human growth experience. We know that behind this experience, life is eternal. The divine essence of you will never die. But meanwhile, we're here, and this is the equipment we've got to take care of and learn to live with. If you think it's odd that Charles Fillmore would mention sex at all, remember that just this month, Pope Francis issued a long document about family life, including quite a bit about sex. Sex has always been a religious topic. It's all through the Bible. The Pope said sex should only take place within marriage. Marriage should be between one man and one woman, and he's still against contraception. But he acknowledged sexual desire. He talked about what happens in marriage when physical attraction wanes. He said sex within marriage is something you keep working on. So rather than surrounding sex with a lot of religious rules, he seemed to make it more of a vocation, a form of creative expression. In his mind, married couples are expressing divine love imperfectly, and it's always a work in progress. The title of his document was The Joy of Love. And I'm not really up on my papal encyclicals, but apparently it's unusual for a pope to acknowledge that sex is an essential part of sharing a life together and being human. And I think Charles Fillmore was trying to say the same thing. Sex should be important and meaningful. Approach it from your higher consciousness. It too is part of your soul's growth. So, on to food. You've probably heard the Fillmores were vegetarian. They first heard about it from their printer. You know, they had a magazine. Their printer was a man named Harry Church. He was Seventh-day Adventist. Did you know they're all vegetarian? And so he told the Fillmores about it in 1895, before it was trendy. And the Fillmores were really intrigued with the idea that thou shalt not kill includes all God's creatures. So here it is again. We believe that all life is sacred and that man should not kill or be a party to the killing of animals for food. Also, that cruelty, war, and wanton destruction of human life will continue so long as men destroy animals. That's a strong statement, that we won't have peace on earth as long as we're killing animals. He said in another place, animals have, quote, intelligence, affection, and apparently souls almost equal to man's. So I'm going to talk about this for a few minutes. And I want you to take a deep breath and remember, this was removed from the statement of faith because Charles Fillmore didn't want to tell you how to live your life. Okay? In 1906, the Fillmores opened a vegetarian restaurant next to their office in downtown Kansas City, famous for its barbecue, and at that time for its stockyards. And it was a very popular restaurant with the lunch crowd downtown, and they put cards on the tables that said, "You can eat here with a clear conscience." Knowing no animal gave its life to satisfy your animal appetite. Whoa. But it was not just about saving animals. Fillmore said, if you're trying to elevate your consciousness, you have to take into consideration what you're putting in your body. You are what you eat. And remember, his goal was a Christ body, some kind of etherealized form that he called regeneration, ready to ascend. He said, when man begins his conscious growth in the spiritual life, he finds that he must overcome carnal appetite and bring all his powers into obedience to divine law. He said, we do not eat matter, but life. Unity Village, which is now our world headquarters, started as a farm where the Fillmores grew produce for their vegetarian restaurant. They also had hens for eggs and goats for milk. They were not vegan, although they were aware of that concept. Charles Fillmore wrote quite a bit about why he was vegetarian. And in 1927, he published a pamphlet called As to Eating Meat. This is one of his less graphic descriptions. He said, we eat the flesh of the animal for the life it contains, yet the fact is that that life has disappeared in its highest degree, and there's left only a lot of cells in various stages of corruption and decay. These are a burden to the human body because of the disintegrating process that has already set in. Yet, ignorant man loads his system with these elements of discord and decay and expects to get life out of them. No wonder his body dies. He also believed animals' bodies were flooded with fear when they realized what was happening at the slaughterhouse. The fight or flight, adrenaline and hormones, and we ingest that. What surprises me reading this 90 years later is that Charles Fillmore was concerned about the same things we hear today: the treatment of animals, the ways they're killed, the conditions in the processing plants. And he didn't have the medical studies we do about the correlation of meat and dairy to heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and osteoporosis. But apparently he had a lot of the same conversations. And one that he addressed at length was to people who say, as they do now, "Yeah, well, you have to kill plants for food too." First, the plant itself often does not die. If you pick an apple off a tree or a tomato off the vine, you're not killing the plant. And the parts of the plant that we eat will not keep living if they're left alone. They'll rot and fall to the ground and go to waste. And then he quoted the Bible, Genesis 1:29. God said, "See, I've given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food." Yielding seed means they can renew themselves. And yes, you can find other verses to support eating meat. The Fillmores were as rigorous about the way they ate as they were about their thoughts and their prayers. They were highly disciplined people. Myrtle had a hilarious exchange of letters with her youngest son, Royal, when he was away at college. He was bringing some friends home for Thanksgiving. This would have been 1909. And he wrote his mother ahead of time and said, "Couldn't we just this once have turkey like other people?" She wrote back and said, "Suppose, dear boy, we cut the turkey out for Thanksgiving and have better things. It doesn't seem quite consistent for people who believe as we do in the sin of taking the creature life, to dish murdered things up on our table. You know we'd have plenty of other delicious things." Myrtle did not cook at all. She built her house at Unity Village with no kitchen. Charles's mother lived across the street and cooked for the whole family. Myrtle also didn't drink alcohol or caffeine, and she was ferocious about not smoking. She said, "I can't quite see the picture of the Christ with a cigarette hanging from his mouth." She went on and said, "I just can't imagine him tossing a cigarette out of his hand before he lifts it to heal someone." And when people wrote to her about their health, and then, as now, health was the number one prayer request, she told them, "Watch your diet. Notice what you're eating." Although Myrtle herself could not stay away from sugar. The Fillmores are not the reason that I'm vegan. Although, I've been surprised at the mental clarity that I think opens the door for deeper spirituality. I've been 95 to 97% vegan the last couple of years. Not entirely. I had cheese with the pasta at the volunteer dinner the other night. Some years I just have salad. And since a lot of you have asked me why I'm vegan, I'm going to take a minute to tell you, not to convert you, not to tell you what you should be doing, and just this once and never again, okay? Vegans eat no animal products, so no meat, dairy, or eggs. Really pure vegans also don't wear leather, silk, wool, or fur. Just leave the animals alone. We have other sources for everything we need. In our society, with our resources, we don't have to kill animals to supply our needs. I found three good reasons for this lifestyle. One is health. The first book I read was called The China Study, and it compares the health of people around the globe with what they're eating. And as you know, Americans are fat and sick. The second is animals. We know that in factory farms they are horribly abused, and I can't stay unconscious about that anymore. I don't want to support it with my dollars. And labels like cage-free and grass-fed are advertising slogans with no distinct definition. You might want to do more research on that. And cows, chickens, and pigs have just as much personality as our cats and dogs. And they have feelings. Even fish have relationships. They also have good memories. Did you know? I bet you didn't. A goldfish has a longer attention span than a human being. Truly. I don't know how they measure it. But the goldfish can focus for 9 seconds, and we can only go for 8. But my favorite statistic is that pigs can play video games as well as a 5-year-old child, and that's without thumbs. We kill 9 billion land animals for food every year in the United States alone. Worldwide, it's 3,000 per second. And as more countries become prosperous, the demand for meat is growing. So I decided, just for me, enough animals have already died for me. I ate them for nearly 60 years. And third, and I didn't know this when I started, animal agriculture takes an enormous toll on the environment. It is the single greatest contributor to man-made greenhouse gases, more than the transportation industry. And that's not coming from a bunch of hippies, that's the United Nations talking. You can do more good for the environment by eating less meat than you can by driving a Prius. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can just be some less meat. Animal agriculture uses enormous amounts of water. If you skip 1 quarter pounder, you save enough water to take showers for a month. And I found one website that was urging beef eaters to skip their showers just to even out the water usage. Apparently, Charles Fillmore decided it didn't have to be all or nothing. Late in life, he started eating a little fish. Myrtle was dead by then. And I think Charles's second wife was not as strict. Charles eventually decided to remove these 2 items from the statement of faith. I get the impression it was controversial with his readers because of the way he wrote about vegetarianism and how often he addressed it. He seemed to be answering some objections. But they also got support for it. Myrtle Fillmore got a letter from a little girl in Australia who said she was trying to make her cats vegetarian. Charles Fillmore removed these 2 because he decided these injunctions about food and sex were good for him, but maybe not everyone. He couldn't claim they were universal truths, which was his intention for this statement. I also heard a minister suggest that these 2 items were the only part of the statement that seemed to be against something. They were more like rules than beliefs. And then, as now, people in Unity didn't want anyone telling them what to do. That's our motto, you can't make me. But Charles still urged us to consider carefully the food we eat and how we handle sexual relationships. Both these items, food and sex, are about not letting your appetites control you. Our bodies are divinely created and a holy part of the human experience. They're temples. So you don't want to hold on to dead ideas and beliefs. You want your mind vital and alive, like your food. You don't want to seek fulfillment out in the world. You want it in your own relationships, whether with spirit or other people. You want fulfillment there. Myrtle said people look outside themselves for joy that can only be spiritual. She said, lust is the result of men and women thinking that true spiritual intercourse is a thing apart from the Lord. And Charles said, all things should be done with a purpose, with pleasure as a concomitant only. Pleasure lends zest to all action, but it should never be exalted to the high place in consciousness. He might have been Victorian, but I agree life is about more than feeling good. Feeling good is wonderful, but it's not the only reason we're here. We are invited to live mindfully, weighing every decision, considering every thought, and watching every word. Jesus said, "The measure you give is the measure you get back, and you will create your life according to that law." So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Let's begin, as we always do, by taking a deep, cleansing, full breath, holding at the top, releasing fully. Bringing ourselves to alignment in our chairs, just shifting maybe. Feet flat on the floor. And bringing our attention to the feet on the floor and feeling ourselves grounding. Grounding ourselves to the energy of the earth below us. That magnetic pull called gravity. And feeling ourselves pulling energy up through the ground. That energy that comes from the molten core of Earth and millions of years of minerals and deposits and rock, elemental energy. That power in human form that reminds us, our grounding reminds us, we are human. We are elemental. Energy that has concentrated in us as us. In these earth suits we call our bodies. We as spiritual beings in human form having this experience. From the earth, up through that chakra system, the energy systems of our bodies, we spiral. We spiral in our awareness, in our consciousness. Awakening, evolving, enlightening. So we bless our body. We bless this vehicle that allows us to experience so much. So with gratitude, knowing that we are here as earth beings and as spiritual beings, we bless the harmony. We awaken to that harmony. And we breathe consciously, breathe deeply into our human body. And deeply into our spiritual body, we know that gratitude and love are the life force. So breathe in deeply. Breathe in once more, and let's celebrate this with the Alleluia.